In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for Kai Rizdahl, who is on assignment. It is Friday, January 6th. Good to have you with us on a tumultuous and busy news day. We are going to start the show the way we do most Fridays, with our wrap-up of the week that was. And joining me now are Lee Gallagher of Fortune Magazine and Neela Richardson, chief economist at Redfin. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Lizzie.
Hi, Lizzie.
So I guess I want to know, now that we have this intelligence community report about this Russian hacking, and really they're saying, yes, it was in fact Russian hacking, does this now become an economic story? Is it an economic story? Is it an economic story, or is it still kind of in the political realm?
I mean, I think it's a political story, but I think bigger picture, it's absolutely an economic story. I mean, this is very real. This is our next big enormous threat in terms of security and also economic threat. I mean, this is, we've seen it with many hacks in the business world over the past couple of years, but I think we're just barely scratching the surface.
Neela?
Hacking is an economic story. We've seen it in our corporate institutions, our financial institutions. It hits the bottom line of every company. And we honestly need to build a wall of cybersecurity that prevents hacking from foreign entities.
Well, so when we think about that, I mean, I guess one of the questions here is, are we thinking long term or immediately changing things for this incoming administration? I don't know, Lee.
I think it's both. I mean, I think the incoming administration, we don't know what to expect. We don't know. There's so many unknowns. It's hard to know how they'll deal with this on top of everything else. But I think it's a very long-term issue. And I think it just requires so much more attention than we're giving it now. And that is both from the public and private sector.
Okay, well, now I'm going to give it even less because I'm going to switch to the hardcore economics of today, which was the jobs report. 156,000 jobs created, 4.7% unemployment. Neela, you are the economist here. The real bright spot was year-over-year wage increase. Is this the thing we've been waiting for?
It is, and what a wonderful baton to pass to the next administration. We have been waiting since the recovery to see a pickup in wage growth. It has been the leading story, even as we've added jobs at a fast clip every month, especially over the last couple of years. Wages were persistently stubborn and low, and this big pop in wage growth is a good sign that maybe we're on a trajectory finally towards improvement in real incomes.
Well, so how then, Lee, does that spin out into affecting, everybody's lives? Does it?
It's definitely a good sign. Wages, as Neela said, have been the stubborn thing that wasn't for a long time. And in fact, today it's funny that job creation and the rate were actually not as strong as they usually are.
Yeah.
So it's the exact opposite we usually see. But the general trend has been positive now for a long time. But I think the real question is, are there jobs for everybody anymore? I mean, our whole job landscape is changing. The middle class is still really threatened and shrinking. And I think I think there's still a lot of problems. And what we really need is plain old growth. I mean, that's also what's been so evasive for us. And
we
just need the economy to start humming again.
And Lizzie, just to add a little bit to Lee's point, over last year, we lost 45,000 manufacturing jobs. So clearly, this is not a broad win in every industry,
right.
And particularly not in the middle of the country where growth is still waiting to happen.
And those jobs are not because of outsourcing. They are because of technology. I mean, obviously, there's some due to jobs being shipped overseas, but this is a huge seismic shift. This is a once-in-a-century shift in our economy that we're still going to be adjusting to for a while.
We don't have a ton of time left, but I want to bring up this really interesting story that the Wall Street Journal reported this week about President-elect Trump's debt. We're talking debt from his businesses, sold and packaged off. People remember how that works from the housing crisis. But oh my goodness, so many different banks and institutions own it. I mean, maybe someone listening owns it in their 401k and they don't know.
It's everywhere. It's amazing. I mean, the Trump debt has been securitized, which if you think about it, makes sense because, that's what happens to debt. But it is like the grand diffusion. I mean, it just lives everywhere. And so the question becomes, how do you possibly separate conflict of interest? You just can't. Yeah.
this vetting process could have, well, the vetting process is going to be on the job. It could have happened earlier, but we didn't have the information. So as Trump assumes the presidency, that's when the vetting is going to occur. And it's so much easier to disentangle yourself from assets. You can sell off assets, but real estate debt is a whole nother ball of wax. It's hard to disentangle, especially when they're backed by your own personal name. And so this is a story that also will continue throughout the year.
All right. I want to thank you both. Neela Richardson from Redfin, Lee Gallagher from Fortune. Thank you both.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Thanks, Lizzie.